Welcome to Trauma Informed Caring, an Essential Conversations podcast, brought to you by the Mid-America Addiction Technology Transfer Center, funded by SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Although funded by SAMHSA, the content on this podcast does not necessarily reflect the views of SAMHSA. It is a trauma-informed practice to begin each of our episodes with a brief moment to center or pause. So I encourage you, wherever you are, if you can, stop what you're doing. And we have invited one of our guests today, Sarah Corlett, to lead us through a brief exercise.
I am going to introduce a concept that is not original to Design Impact, but something I learned while working here called panning, which is short for pay attention now. And it is a brief exercise that can be done at any given moment that calls us to just take notice of our own bodies and what we're feeling at a moment in time without judgment. So I'm going to lead you through a little moment of just settling and centering and offer up some prompts. And hopefully this is something simple that you can take with you at any given moment. So I will invite you, wherever you are, to just get settled in your body. Grounding deep breaths, scrunch your shoulders up by your ears if you need to, stretch your arms tall, get settled in your seats, and take a few breaths just to arrive. And at the end of your next breath, I will just invite you to pay attention to your body. What, if anything, are you noticing about your body? Are there places of tension? Are you hungry? Are there places of ease? No judgment. Just take notice. What do you feel in your body? Take another big deep breath. And I will invite you to pay attention now to your thoughts. What, if anything, do you notice about your thoughts? Is your mind racing? Is it quiet? Is it being pulled in a certain direction? And no judgment, just notice at this very moment in time, what is happening with your thoughts? Take another deep breath. And now I'll invite you to notice your emotions. So, what, if anything, are you feeling at this moment in time? Are you tired? Are you excited? Are you curious? No judgment. Just pay attention to this moment in time, wherever you are. What are you feeling? Take another deep breath just to really seal off this moment of pan. I will just say that it's just a practice of paying attention to your body, which isn't something we often do. While standalone may not be significant over time, perhaps you might start to see patterns about your thoughts, about your feelings, about your body that you didn't notice before. And that can be really helpful information in addition to just the practice of slowing down to remember to be in your body and your feelings and a reminder of your humanity. So panning.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And thank you to our listeners for joining today. I'm Andrea Dalton.
And I'm Roxanne Pendleton.
And this is Trauma Informed Caring. So you've already heard from one of our guests on today's episode. Actually, Sarah, I'll invite you to maybe just say a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I am Sarah Corlett. I work for Design Impact. We are a social innovation organization that's located in the Midwest in Cincinnati, Ohio, but our work spans across the country. And I am director of community development there. I get to consult nonprofit organizations and communities and institutions on new ways to approach social issues, really using a lot of creativity and centering equity. So that's just a little bit about me and my work.
Thank you. And our other guest today, Keithia, would you just introduce yourself?
My name is Keithia Roberts. I am currently a housing specialist for the Tabard House Services. I am based out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Thank you. Thank you both so much for joining us today. I've had the pleasure of working with both of them on a project at the place where Keithia used to work before her new position, and continuing to work with Sarah now on a project with an affordable housing provider that is nationwide as well. And just been a really fantastic project to get to be part of. And I think one of the greatest things is I've gotten to meet both of these lovely people throughout that project. So,
and we are really excited to have both of you with us today. We have a mission here on the Trauma-Informed Caring podcast that we really want to explore varied perspectives. We want to nurture knowledge in real-world settings so that we can inspire courage for practical action that transforms, you know, the world. So you're in that work with us. And today we're going to be talking about how do you navigate the reality when you learn that trauma-informed care is not something you just do once and then you're done. It's not a checklist. It's not like this sprint to the finish line. And it's not even a marathon because there's actually no ending. Really a new way of being in the world and doing all the things you do. And so that's the theme today. How do you wrap your mind around that? How do you prepare your mindset for that journey? And how do you take good care of yourself and others in the midst? And so I'd like to start by asking Sarah, what was your first introduction to trauma-informed care? And, you know, when did the realization hit you that it was different, that it wasn't just something you checked a list off and moved on from?
Well, I probably first heard about it years ago, and it was actually, it was a previous employer of mine, a community development organization in Philadelphia, and I still followed them. And they were sharing and celebrating that they were using a trauma-informed approach to their work as an organization. And so I think to me, like the word approach indicated that it wasn't necessarily an end point, that it was a way of coming at the work. And so I did a little bit of like Google searching and was like, wow, that sounds really intriguing. I worked with another local housing provider here in Cincinnati, and one of their staff happened to have a background as like a trauma therapist. And so it wasn't an organizational-wide approach, but it was sort of a way he talked about his work as being trauma-informed. But I would say it's really been in the last year since working with Andrea and Krisha and your team that I've actually gotten deep into it. And I think what's interesting is like even we had a couple of trainings, like when we kicked things off, it was back in January, we had a couple day trainings on trauma-informed care, and they were really dense, rich days. And I remember hearing about the principles and thinking like, how am I ever going to remember these, and like writing them on post-its so that I would remember. But I feel, it's really been cool in the last couple of months to see like, oh, it's getting baked in. It's like, it's everywhere now. And like, I can spot the principles, what their absence or their presence. And so I guess to answer your question, I feel like I always understood that it wasn't necessarily like a singular thing. It was an approach, but I would say like even in the last year, just getting to know it and then seeing how it slowly crept in, that I'm starting to really see that it's a way you can approach a lot of different things.
I've really been noticing how many more organizations now are saying, like, we use a trauma-informed approach versus, I think for a while, a lot of people would say, like, we're a trauma-informed organization. And we would even get calls and requests like asking us for, like, do you provide a certification as a trauma-informed organization? Like, can we become certified as trauma-informed? And we always were pretty resistant to that because we don't think that it's just something that you can complete some requirements and like you're done. We really want to encourage that ongoing application of it. And like you said, that it's not just something that we do in our organizations, but it's something we're doing in all areas of our lives. And I think that's where it really starts to, I like how you said, like the principles are sort of baked in, like you just see them show up everywhere. And I know for me, that was one of the really cool things about I think my own personal transformation into becoming increasingly trauma-informed was just recognizing when I would see some of those principles in action or notice when it wasn't there. Thanks for sharing that. Keithia, how about for you? Kind of same question. When you have a really great story actually about how trauma-informed care was like a huge aha for you, I think.
Yes, actually. This is full circle for me. It started back for me when I first started in property management, and I had no idea that that's what I was doing. I was sent to this property to just be the secretary and answer the phones. And the next thing I know, I was sitting in my office for hours on end, basically hearing life stories. They just needed someone to talk to. And things that weren't told to anyone else, they were comfortable telling me. And I understood that. And it was overwhelming because I didn't know what was going on, what to do about it. But after a while, it helped develop how I approached different tenants when I knew that they had other things going on in their life while rent wasn't paid. So I wasn't the typical property manager at that time. I always knew my residents well enough to say, okay, this person didn't pay their rent because maybe something triggered them. Some of my residents had mental illness that was never treated, never addressed, and I was able to see that. And so my approach changed because of that. And that was the light that started to burn for me and say, okay, this is something different. And so I took those same things that I learned and applied them to just throughout my work. And now my previous employer, they introduced us to the Ladies for Community Impact. And then we got involved with the trauma-informed care, which was like, oh, this is awesome. This is what it is. And then with me going back to school, just coming together, the mindset for me, and knowing that I just can't be like a typical property manager and say, okay, well, you didn't pay your rent. And this is what the late fee is. And this is what HUD says. And this is this. I have to look at it as a whole and say, okay, so what can we do to help this resident? I didn't know it was called trauma-informed care. And now I know what it is. And so I'm so like, I want to gobble it all up. I'm excited about it. And, you know, I'm one of the ones that want to spread the word about it. Excited about
it. Yeah, I remember saying to Keithia, you were trauma-informed before you ever heard the words trauma-informed care.
Yeah, as I listen to you speak and share that story, it's very clear that, you know, the mindset shift from I'm here to answer questions and collect rent to I'm creating a safe space for human beings to be seen and acknowledged and cared for. Because as I support them in being successful, then they make my business successful, you know? So it's like a win-win, moving from something that was just more maybe like a transaction-based to a relationship-based. And that actually, as you were talking, I wondered to myself, and I wondered if you would mind sharing, if you have any tips for our readers, as someone who day after day, all day long, has people in your office sharing with you some hard stories. How do you prepare your own mindset or perhaps your being, your soul to not soak in and take home all that pain? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. And it has taken me about 4 to 5 years to figure it out because I took on everything and I was so engrossed and so thinking about it when I got home, would sleep with it, woke up with it, and it was drowning and sucking the life out of me and I couldn't give anymore. So what I've been doing for the last few months, I've been using one of the apps called Headspace. That's for sure. Definitely taking a moment in the morning and going through each of the applications that they have and just settling my mind and calming myself. Also making affirmations. I know that every day is going to be different. Take it as it is and you'll get through it. And just breathe. Most importantly, breathe. I know for me, being a mom, a wife, and I'm in school, full-time job, juggling all of these things. This year was the year for me. I decided to choose me, taking those moments to just say, you know, I need to breathe. I need a moment. If I need a day, I will take off for a day for mental health. I really believe that you really need to take a moment for yourself, always invest in yourself.
Yeah. And I think that connects really well with one of the concepts that we have been trying to weave through a lot of our work and also in this podcast is the idea of self-compassion and the practice of self-compassion and how, you know, when we take those opportunities to tune in, like identify how things are affecting us and how maybe we've judged ourselves for our responses in the past. And instead of holding on to that judgment, like treating ourselves with kindness and what is the kindest thing I can do for myself right now? And remembering that, again, it's a journey. Anyway, I just appreciate you sharing all of that with us.
Could share a little bit with us about just the mindset that says this kind of thing is important.
Well, first, I'll just say that I feel like it's funny. We practice a lot of things, but we don't call them practice when we're adults. And then it sounds like this thing that we have to do that's new, but it's like, how many times did you mess up on that kind of, that recipe that you were working on that you kept trying and you were practicing and then you got it right? Or like, I mean, parenting is just what years and years of practice.
For sure.
Real end, except this just intrinsic interest to like learn and try something different and maybe get something right. And maybe that's why I found the work that I have for Design Impact. Like, we never know what the outcome is going to be. Like, every partner is different. And what we're offering is a process or a container to figure out what the outcome is going to be. And we just want that container to look different. And in a lot of ways, we want it to be trauma-informed. Like, the language I'm learning around trauma-informed is helping me see the ways that we've been practicing it. Mm-hmm. By the ways that we take this container, right? Like we have to value lived experience. We have to honor that as true expertise. We want to make room to see the whole person. We have to slow down when we're bringing a lot of different perspectives together. Like, we can't move fast. We have to make sure we try to make room for understanding. And so I think a couple of mindsets stand out to me. One of them is maybe even being okay with some ambiguity in the unknown.
I was just going to say that, like, There are certain personality types or preferences, at least. I could just feel like the skin crawling on, be okay with not knowing what's going to happen in the end. What? You mean I'm not going to know what's going to happen in the end? I mean, yeah, I think that being okay with ambiguity, not knowing, not like begin with the end in mind. Well, you can't if you don't know what the end is going to be, right? So being okay with the messiness of it. Mm-hmm. Is a piece of the mindset that I'm hearing.
Yeah, no, being okay with the messiness for sure. And I think I'll just emphasize that, like, what's resonated with me about this process and then its connection to our own work is because we don't know the outcome. Like, you still have to name something to guide you along a journey. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody likes to just be in the wilderness. Like, you have to have some structure. And so I think, like, oftentimes when we tell people to embrace this mindset, one of them is often like embracing ambiguity. The mindsets help at least ground people and give them something to attach to.
You do have to have some sort of guiding principles or, you know, ideas, things you hope for, maybe.
I think that's where the trauma-informed principles really come in. If you know, and you can look back and say, we made this a safer space, whether that's physically, emotionally, mm-hmm. socially, morally, spiritually, relationally. So there's that overarching guideline, if you will, like Andrea said. And then in the midst of that, if we truly honor that lived experience and the people that we serve and the people who are our teammates, then there's no way to pre-plan how it's all going to go. We have to allow for those individuals to bring their full humanity to the table, to be as authentic as they're feeling that they can be, to trust them and to trust the process that if we have the end in mind that is more safety or the end in mind that there's more collaboration, then we trust the messiness in the midst of the process because we trust our peers and we trust the people we serve. So to me, the trauma-informed care principles are what we can anchor our intentions and our desires for our outcome in. But what we can't know is how we're going to live those out in real life. So Keithia, do you have anything you want to add to this discussion here about the ambiguity, the messiness, et cetera?
I totally agree. Maybe focusing on a particular your end, maybe we should get away from that. Maybe there is no end. Maybe there's always a continuum of growth. Mm-hmm. So I know there it's hard for some people to stop. You know, we need to know that this is going to end in a perfect little bow and tie it all up. Continuing growth. Maybe this is not the end. This is just the beginning of something new, something better. Addressing individuals for who they are and meet them where they are. No judgment. And that's how I see my residents. I don't judge them at all. Their main purpose is they want to be heard. And when they feel that you don't listen to them, like truly listen, you know, they think that you're just dismissing them, truly vulnerable enough for you to see them as they are.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I love that. That's something that's been popping up a lot in our conversations too, is that idea that each person is an individual, each person is a human being, and the value that alone has. And I think that maybe that's, like, for me, that's one of those overarching guiding principles of my life. I think I'm getting a little emotional actually thinking about that. Just how valuable each interaction is, each person is, and how much power we have to impact somebody in a way that could be life-changing. And we don't always know that. I mean, we hardly ever know, I think, that that's going to happen when it does. And then it's amazing when that does happen.
So real quick, I have a story, actually, just to show you how individuals want to be seen. So I had a resident in the past. I hadn't seen him for a couple of days. I'm checking with other residents, like, hey, have you seen this individual? No one has seen him. And then all of a sudden, one day, he just showed up. I wanted to give him his space. And so he went to his apartment. So I gave him a few minutes. And I went upstairs with my maintenance guy. And I just knocked on his door. He answered the door abruptly because he wasn't expecting anyone. So I was talking to him and I said, hey, I know you're behind in your rent, but I haven't seen you in a very long time. How are you? Just those words alone. How are you? He just busted into tears. And he said, I've been struggling with my mental illness and I didn't know what to do. He said, I just got my medication. Again, we're dealing with a population that does not have access to medication on a regular basis. Instead of me saying, well, as your property manager, here is the 30-day notice and you have 10 days, blah, 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 blah. I took his hands and I said, hey, it's okay. It's all right. We're going to work through this. I'm going to make sure I talk to the other property managers, the management company, and we're going to find some services for you. We're going to find some organizations that can help you get caught up on your rent. I said, everything is going to be okay. He's like, you're not going to evict me, are you? I said, relax. It's okay. I said, these are the steps that we're going to do. Okay. We're going to get you back on track and everything's going to be all right. I said, I want to let you go ahead and get some rest. I said, come see me in the morning and then we'll start talking about some steps. That's all. The residents, they work so hard on getting an apartment. And this is their only safe haven for some. And for you to just see them and to hear them, I could have easily dismissed everything he said and just gave him a notice and told him he needed to be out of that unit in so much amount of days. But instead, I met him as an individual, as a person, and understood enough to want to help. And a lot of my residents, they've already experienced trauma from their childhood trauma. And that's what I'm also intrigued in. A lot of childhood trauma affects adulthood decisions mm-hmm. because they never were given those tools to address issues.
That's awesome. Something that you said reminded me of one of the books that's on my desk, reading it often and again, is My Grandmother's Hands by Resmaa Menakem. And it's an amazing, amazing book. And he's an amazing person and speaker. And I like to absorb everything that he says. And one of the things that really struck me in some of his work is that idea that those things that happened to us when we were young, or really like any time, those traumatic events, they get decontextualized really soon after because we go into some other place. We go to some other environment. We go to it's a different relationship. But those reactions, those behaviors that we had in response to the traumatic event are kind of the same. But then they seem out of place because now we're in this different context. And I think I think you have for sure to sort of see beyond the context that you're in at the moment and really look into, I wonder what happened to this person. Again, you were trauma-informed before you ever heard the words. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that story. That's really great.
I just think about the individual too, how that what a different experience you gave that person. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times when you come and say, I can't pay my rent, or I know my rent is late. I don't know if anyone on this podcast has been in that position, but that you are already expecting to be shamed, right? You're coming in with a sense of shame and guilt, expecting to be scolded and threatened and punished. And you didn't do any of that. You looked at that person and asked what happened and listened and allowed for this experience of what to me felt like grace. And instead they get help. You were serving as an external support. You were going to meet the next day after they had rested. So you knew his brain needed a little sleep and he needed a little space. And then you were going to say, what other services can we bring in? And so then you connected him with more supports. And that experience is probably really different. It's certainly different than what was expected. And back to Andrea's point about contextualized responses or decontextualized responses, if all you had in the past was mm-hmm. punishment and threat, then your reaction, especially if you have a mental illness, there's so much stigma. Your reaction is just going to be dread or maybe even anger or defensiveness or who knows what. And the power, like you said, Keithia, of just meeting someone where they are and listening, asking that question, how are you? Mm-hmm. You know, Andrea's done that to me before and I've burst into tears and vice versa, because, you know, we're going through our days and we're working on our tasks and we're getting stuff done. And then someone really checks in with you.
Yeah. Asking how are you and actually wanting to know the answer.
Yeah. How are you really?
Yeah.
Just that is a gift. And so I hope that our listeners are, you know, as they follow along, they're picking up that being trauma-informed, the mindset doesn't mean you have to go do something really huge. It can be something as simple as asking someone in your world, how are you really? And then meeting them where they are, like you said, with no judgment, truly listening. And, you know, you said everyone wants to be heard. And I think that's really true.
And really, that's, I think, the impetus behind us calling this podcast Trauma-Informed Caring. We're starting to use that language in a lot of other places too, because it is really about that action of, you know, how do we relate to other people? And not just this thing, this trauma-informed care thing. There's some motion to it. There's some action to it.
I'm just feeling really inspired because I'm thinking about, like, Keithia was something, you know, you were sort of acknowledging the impact of childhood trauma or like personal experiences on our behaviors or the way we operate in the world. But I also started just thinking about, like, not just our personal experiences. And what I appreciated about when I started to learn more about trauma-informed care was the acknowledgement of this like systemic and community trauma that we all face, certain communities disproportionately to others. You know, I'm just thinking about like that we are conditioned in a lot of ways. And for now, I'll like name them. Like one culprit of that is like capitalism, where we are like exploited as humans for our ability to be productive, and our value is assigned to how productive we are. So like paying your rent, proving employment, mm-hmm. like these very transactional things, we are wired from the very beginning, unless we have people that are countering that, to see ourselves and value ourselves in attachment to these like things that aren't really honoring our humanity. They're treating us like objects, you know? And so I guess what's coming up for me is just like, I've appreciated that lens of like all of the ways that we are conditioned, in addition to whatever personal traumas we face, that we're conditioned to see ourselves not as humans, but as like producers. And I guess what makes me inspired is like seeing trauma informed as a practice that starts to dismantle that, that starts to say, like, to come, like, bring us back to our humanity and like the complexity and layers of who we are, and also how we're all connected. We're not just connected because we produce the same thing, or we get paid the same amount, or we live in this certain kind of housing, but because like we're inherently human and have worth. So that was just a moment of like, I was just feeling inspired and listening to your stories and hearing these connections. And I think it comes back to, in terms of like, if you are in this practice or you're starting this practice of being trauma-informed, to like know that you're like working against some pretty massive stuff. So to have compassion for yourself,
yeah,
it takes so much intention. And it's, we have to, I think one of the other mindsets is just, Keithia, you named curiosity at some point, but also being okay with like getting it wrong or whatever. If you can, you know what I mean? Like slipping in and out of the practice, I guess, is something that I feel like we have to expect Like you're trauma informed in 1 minute, and then the next minute something happens and I have no more, I have no ability to collaborate with my children. I'm just going to tell them what to do and send them to their room. You know, we all have those moments.
Another thing that I was thinking as you were speaking is the mindset of being okay with the fact that you get fatigued. Mm-hmm. You said it, and I think we all agree, we are up against powerful forces that have shaped culture for centuries. And we are trying to be a new way. And that is innately countercultural, which takes extra energy and can wear us out. But the fact that you even had that thought, I'm not going to be collaborative, I'm just going to be coercive right now, is showing me that you're aware, like you are trauma-informed. You're like, yep, there are several ways to do this. And I'm choosing this one way because that is the most expedient thing at the moment, right? And then the ability to kind of reflect over your actions at another time, right? And grow, there's that word again too, continue to grow and continue to become more fully whole. And I think that also some people are afraid to implement trauma-informed care because they are afraid that it means you let people get away with things, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then life's just, you know, anyone does whatever they want. There's no consequences, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to go back to Keithia's story about working with this tenant. You know, I heard you say, I hear you, I see you, I understand you're having a rough time. It's going to be okay. You didn't say you never have to pay rent again. You said, I'm going to help you get the resources you need so you can pay your rent, right? Like, so it wasn't that there were no rules or consequences or, you know, structure. It's just the way that you did it human to human, bringing in resources and having compassion. I think some people are afraid of implementing trauma-informed care initially because they think it's too soft. maybe, and maybe, you know, that's a lesson for all of us in the fact that, you know, the strongest motivating force on the planet is love. Think about what a parent would do for their child to rescue them or, you know, to fight for them, to protect them. So it's not soft. It's just not punitive. And we're in a culture that's really used to punitive means. So I think just being aware of that mindset and being aware that you can get tired and that's normal. And then knowing what you need to restore yourself is also a part of the work. And I'm wondering if, Keithia, what do you want to say to that?
I'm learning that to restore myself. Yeah. I'm learning that. I really learned about compassion fatigue through another coworker, my former coworker from Community Impact. She informed me that's what I was feeling. I was so depleted. Mm-hmm. Because again, I was all over the place and okay, let me do this. And I have renamed myself solution specialist at my job because if a resident had an issue, I was the person, I had the resources, I had case managers' names, I had Our Daily Bread, other resources. Basically, these are resources that can help with rent, furniture, utilities, any of that. I was that person. And it had drained me so that I was feeling pain in my chest coming to work, knowing that all of these things had to be solved. And I know that my phone messages were so filled up and I couldn't call everybody back. And then the pandemic hit and it was just a chaos. It was just chaotic, very chaotic there. My coworker came to me and she, again, checking in with me intentionally. Checking in with me. And I busted into tears and I was like, I just can't do this anymore. And she said, you're suffering from compassion fatigue, my friend. That's you care enough, you put in every effort, but you're not getting anything back to fill you up. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. That was one of the reasons why I left my job is because it was just too much. And to your other point, about people just not seeing people for who they are because of how they grew up and what they were taught about those particular populations. I think a lot of that has to do with how it's very easy for people to dismiss people. It's very easy for me to say, well, according to your handbook or according to your lease, you're in violation of A, B, and C. It's really easy for me to, well, I have documentation to back me up. You have your feelings, which can change whenever. But I think it's okay to just look at a person being human. What's wrong with being a human being
being a flawed individual and looking at and seeing another flawed individual. Nobody's better than anybody because everybody has skeletons in their closet. Everybody has mistakes they have made. Just grace and mercy, grace and mercy, because we all do it. Just learn from it. Can we work together to do better?
Yeah. I so appreciate you sharing that personal perspective and example. I was thinking about how every time I encounter compassion fatigue, whether it's in myself or in other people and their sharing of their stories, it just makes me think like how important it is that we're trauma informed, not just with the other people that are around us, but also with ourselves and doing what we need to do to take care of ourselves while we're taking care of other people. It's just a vital practice because if we don't, we're not going to be able to sustain that trauma-informed caring toward others in the same way. Then we end up, you know, defaulting to our maybe not so great ways of interacting or our more coercive ways of interacting with people or, you know, just trying to get our needs met in whatever way we desperately can in that moment. So
I actually have a story about that that's very recent. And I think it shines a light on the reality that no matter how long you're in this work, and no matter how intuitively it may come to you, and no matter how clear your intentions are, again, you are still a human being and have your blind spots and you have your ways, you're kind of set in your ways. And I actually did get very sick with COVID last December. And it took me quite a while to start to recover. And I wanted it to be done. Like I was like, okay, had it done and get back into normal life. And yet what has happened for me again and again over the past 9 months is that I have what I guess they're called flare-ups of the symptoms. And they're excruciating and they're debilitating and they keep getting worse. And I just keep, you know, I have good practices. And yet I'm a fairly productive person and I have a lot of balls I try to keep in the air. And yet I've not been feeling well. And a friend of mine took me out. She was actually my landlord, Keithia. She's my landlord and my friend. And she took me out. She said, let's go get, you know, like a green smoothie or something. And so we did. And what I didn't realize is that it was kind of one of those come to Jesus meetings. We were sitting there having our very healthy food. And she said, Roxanne, you're not okay. And I blinked for a minute and she said, something happened to you. COVID happened and you're not okay. And dang it, if I didn't, again, just of course, being fully seen, the tears came. And it was very hard for me to accept that. It was very hard for me to think, what do you mean I'm not okay? I'm fully functioning. I'm producing. I'm making an A. I'm a producer, Sarah. I'm producing. She said, but you're not okay. Look at what's happening in your body. Listen to what your body is telling you. And for me, then just the days after that and the weeks after that, and just having the self-acceptance to say, something happened to me. Something happened to me that we still as scientists and doctors and as a community have no idea what the long-term outcomes will be. Talk about being comfortable with the ambiguity or uncomfortable as the case may be. And so I've just noticed since I had that friend and I'm surrounded by my team and a group of other people who've been incredibly compassionate with me. I think they've been much more compassionate with me than I have myself, giving me options to rest more. They've been very grace-filled. It's harder for me to be grace-filled to me. So coming back to that trauma-informed mindset of that very simple, something happened to you or something happened to me. And it's a practice. Back to that practice word, because it is not natural for me to come at myself with that kind of understanding. So back to self-compassion, I have several friends checking in and there's really nothing that can be done at this point. And so they say, what do you need? And I say prayer and compassion. And then the little voice inside me says, yeah, you could give yourself some of that too. So part of the mindset, I think, is that something has happened to all of us. And it might be outside of the work, it might be in the work, it might be both. But if we can claim that value for ourselves, that our work is not all of who we are, and that our worth is because we are also human beings, I often say it's hard to give what you haven't experienced. And so the more compassion we can give ourselves, I really truly do believe that the more compassion then is present in the world, and the easier it is for us to access that and give it to others. But ultimately, when we can get into that place of giving ourselves that deep compassion, then something transforms and the world is never the same after that either. And so I just wanted to share that. And if anyone wants to, you know, piggyback on that, but I do want our listeners to at least be invited, especially if you're struggling right now, sit with yourself and just try to accept that something happened to you. Something happened. You know, how can you love yourself through that?
Thank you for sharing that, Roxanne. And I'm sorry that happened to you. It sucks. It sucks. And it's interesting because I think you're totally right. It is so much harder to be compassionate for ourselves. Then you layer on our different identities and those, once again, those like social systems, you know, when it, systems of oppression that like impact our ability to be trauma informed with ourselves, whether it's because we're women, because we're Black or Brown or Indigenous, like all of it, or we're not able-bodied, all of those things like tell us different stories about our worth. But one thing that you said made me think of something someone said to me recently, and maybe it's just also helpful for our listeners in terms of things being cyclical. So like, I don't know about your relationship with your landlord or friend, but my guess is that at some point you told her she wasn't okay. You saw her as a whole person. And so this idea that even if you're struggling to practice it yourself, like it's okay to at this moment also just put it out in the world and it and know that it'll be fed back to you. Mm-hmm. I think about that because one of the things I say to my kids at night is like, I literally say you are worthy just because you are. And like, I love you no matter what. And like, the thing is they're eventually like, they're reflecting that back to me, you know, like the more I say to them, mistakes are okay. Then they tell me that they catch me on that. So just, I also love this idea of if you are in this practice and you're like, it is really hard to do this on myself. Like sometimes there's a beauty in feeding it out to other people. Like, I don't know, Keithia, if that's happened to you, all these people that you're reaching out to and you're seeing them as whole people, like even your coworker, right? Like how is that cyclical? And it's really beautiful.
It finally dawned on me to see it actually when I was leaving my old company. I did not realize. I realized I impacted people. I realized that I gave my all in all. I realized that I was genuine and intentional when I did those things. And when I was leaving, I did not expect anything. And that's the good thing about this. You do it just because. And so when it came back to me, it was unexpected. It was awesome. I had to force myself to embrace it. It was never told to me, thank you. You made an impact on me. Thank you. You helped me with the decision. You know, I never just expected those things. And so when it did come back to me, it hit me hard. Like my last day with you guys on on our meeting, I really didn't expect those words of affirmations. I really was taken back by that because, again, I'm still learning how to love me, be okay with me, and accept those compliments, accept those affirmations, accept that you are making a difference in someone's life. And don't expect anything back from now because guess what? It's going to come back to you anyway through someone else, you know, or through another situation such as this. It's a beautiful platform for this. But I had to put my feelings aside of, hey, wait a minute, you don't deserve that. You know, that I'd really say, yes, you deserve that. It said, just accept it. It's okay.
That was amazing.
What I was thinking as you were speaking is I just got this image of, you know, the things that we put into the world in this work, whatever it is that we're nurturing in the culture, if it's compassion, if it's really seeing people, if it's really listening to them, it's, you know, if it's meeting them where they are without judgment, if it's providing support, I really do think in this work, I've seen it time and again, and you just described it beautifully, that you, that we end up being nurtured by the culture that we have nurtured. Mm-hmm. You know, there is this cyclical nature to it. There is this reciprocity. There is this natural, because if you add more caring into the world, guess what? You're part of the world that needs caring. Right. So you get it too. And I think that's really a lovely place to perhaps end our discussion today.
Wow. This has been a really amazing, inspirational conversation today. Thank you, Sarah and Keithia, both for joining us today. It's been great to be in this conversation. I wish we could keep talking and I'm sure we will. this has been, I think we had a lot of takeaways from today. We're going to try to wrap it up into just a few. So Roxanne, you want to start us off with one of those takeaways?
Yeah. The first takeaway I'd like to highlight is that trauma-informed caring is a practice. There's no end. It's not a checklist. It's not a project that has a beginning, a middle, and a stop point, but it is more like a continuing way of growing and being. And it's an ongoing practice of creating safe space for fellow human beings to be seen and heard and listened to without judgment and supported into success.
Yeah. And then I think the second key takeaway really is about the fact that we do get tired doing this work. The fatigue is normal, and it happens because trauma-informed caring is a countercultural thing. We're countering all this conditioning that is existing in the world, whether we're talking about trauma-informed caring for other people or caring for ourselves. And because of that, we have to really be intentional about how we continue to restore ourselves. And that's just really imperative if we're going to sustain ourselves individually as well as the work.
Yeah. And sometimes what has happened to us is not just what happened to us outside the work, but it's what happens to us within the work. And so part of trauma-informed caring is nurturing and cultivating and sustaining this culture that in the end comes back around and nurtures and sustains you. What we put into the world, the compassion, the affirmation, the kindness, the support, that comes back to us. And I think that's really, that's a beautiful way to live. So thanks again to our guests. You've really given us a lot to think about and a lot of inspiration today. And we also want to say to our listeners, if you want more information, you can check out the Mid-America ATTC website. You can also check out the virtual room of refuge, where you can find a variety of support for your own well-being. You can access our YouTube channel there. You can subscribe to our newsletter, Conscious Connections there. And again, thank you for joining us. It is our hope that where you work and where you live, this podcast will offer you practical support for the practice of trauma-informed caring.